I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tomás la pone Parejo,
sí,
al segundo palo Sorlo, gol. Gol, 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 del Villarreal. Llega el triplete, llega el hat-trick de Alexander Sorlo y también el triplete de asistencias de Dani Parejo.
Hello everybody and welcome to another episode of La Liga Lowdown. I'm your host Matt Clark, joined once again by Roman de Arquer. Roman, it's been another fun-filled weekend in La Liga. Lots of goals, lots of drama, bit of controversy, just how we like it. How you doing?
Hey, Matt. Well, at a personal level, a bit disappointed with how the last game went for Barca. But despite that, as you said, there have been plenty of goals, some really entertaining games there. With, of course, a lot of opportunities, a lot of goals scored. And I think the average La Liga fan will have enjoyed the matches this weekend.
I think so. Something for everyone. Let's start, though, at Mestalla. Valencia against Real Madrid. This fixture last season was quite highly charged with all the Vinicius chants and lots of controversy about that and his reaction, Madrid's reaction to the fans as a whole compared to just the minority that were abusive. So a lot of emotion going into the game. 2-0 up in very quick time. Hugo Duro and Roman Yaremchuk. But, of course, Real Madrid got back into it, and it was Vinicius who was the main protagonist. Roman, what a game. We'll talk about the controversy at the end in just a moment, but first of all, an entertaining watch before the drama.
Yeah, I mean, with all the build-up before, it kind of felt like it had to be entertaining one way or another, whether it was through the goals or through some other means. But in the end, I mean, as you said, Valencia started off so well. It seemed like they had the game quite under control in a way. But that's the thing. When you score early goals against Madrid, you know that you're going to have to be pouring water out of your boat for the rest of the game, you know, because they're going to come stronger. They're going to keep pushing. And you know they eventually are going to score at least a goal or two. So it kind of felt like a comeback was very, very possible. And it would have been possible if it hadn't been for the referee, but as you said, we'll mention that later.
Well, yeah, I mean, here we go. So they equalised fairly early. I mean, they still had 15 minutes plus to try and find that winner, which, again, having seen Madrid many, many times, you thought, yeah, this is just inevitable. But we thought it was there. A corner in the last play of the game. It's cleared out. It comes back across. It crosses in. Bellingham heads home. It goes into the back of the net. But Gil Manzano has blown. Certainly before the header. The question is, did he blow before the cross or did he blow when the ball was in the air? It's been a very controversial subject in Spain this weekend. Just to add to it even more, Mateo Lahoz has been on the radio on Sunday night to say that, yeah, the problem in Spain is referees have too big an ego, says Mateo Lahoz on national radio. But the irony is not lost on many there. But Roman, what was your take on this dramatic play? Because it all boiled over. Jude Bellingham got sent off. So much chaos.
Well, on one hand, I think we can all agree on the referee making a massive mistake there, you know, because you can't blow the whistle at that point. You either wait till the cross is completed or you blow before there's any opportunity of that happening. And in that sense, he made a mistake and I'm sure he's going to pay for it and I'm sure he regrets being in that situation.
although he has been in a very similar situation before. I don't know if our listeners know, but against Malaga in a game years ago before halftime, there was a cross and the Malaga striker headed the ball. And as soon as he headed the ball, he blew the end of the game and the ball was heading inward. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's happened before to him for some reason and he's made the same mistake again. But I honestly think it was just unlucky because he does like go for the whistle. I guess he sees that maybe there's a cross, but then he realizes that the position is kind of unusual for a cross. And in the end, Brahim manages to put the ball through. But he does, for me, whistle just as soon as he hits the ball. So it's like maybe the ball is slightly started to go upwards, but I mean, it just came off his foot in that moment, because I've been listening to the replay quite a few times to hear when the first whistle sounds. And honestly, it isn't when the ball is arriving onto Bellingham's head like it happened against Malaga. It's a bit before that. So, I mean, despite the circumstances, at least it wasn't the worst case scenario. But in the end, it's true that the added time, you know, had been surpassed by quite a bit. And the game should have been over even before. So, honestly, he should have whistled the end of the game sooner. But he made the mistake, and it's football, you know. We love the controversy. It always happens, at least here in Spain, on a weekly basis, I'd say. And it is what it is, you know.
Well, there's plenty in the Prem as well. Don't worry about that, especially about added time and goals coming very late. I suppose many would argue that because there was a bit of a VAR in added time itself, that then adds on, and it is, of course, a minimum of 7 true. Minutes. And all the drama happening kind of, you know, 98-99. But, yeah, as it is, a point apiece. Real Madrid, again, stumbling in terms of results. They haven't won back-to-back league games since the start of February. So a little bit of a couple of stumbles there. But their rivals are not able to take advantage of it, because this weekend, Madrid actually increased their lead at the top of the table to 7 points. And that is because Girona went to Mallorca, who we thought would have a hangover from their Copa triumphs, having played 120 minutes in San Sebastian, going through the penalties, celebrating the win. But no, they were the team that were pushing and pressing. And as Girona found in the Copa, they weren't able to get anything from Mallorca. And this was, I don't know, Girona's form has taken a real slump, especially away from home. Well, we know that San Mamés and the Bernabeu are very tough places to go. But then, you know, they've also lost here in Mallorca, and of course they lost two also in the Copa at the same ground. So a bit of a bogey ground for them. 7 points back now, they're just going to have to try and cling on for Champions League now.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I kind of think like we all felt this was going to happen probably sooner, that at some point Girona wouldn't be capable of sustaining, you know, that high level football, those incredible results. And I guess it was a matter of time. At some point they began to struggle, and for me it makes complete sense for this to happen at some point. I think it's still incredible what they're doing. They're still in a very or relatively comfortable position, in my opinion, in the fight for the Champions League. Of course, it's true that Barca are 1 point away, Atletico are just 4 points away, but then Athletic Club is 9 points away. So I mean, in that sense, they can still breathe easy. I'm sure they're going to get back to wins. It's not going to be dramatic, I don't think, because the team has the quality and they're always going to have these sort of slumps. But they'll have to make the most, you know, of their home form, let's say their home games, basically. And on the other hand, we thought, as you said, that Mallorca might be a bit tired from that important clash in the Copa del Rey, but they got three crucial points that I won't say mathematically, obviously, it doesn't save them. But it really puts them clear off those bottom positions, and now they can breathe much easier. And also knowing that they have a Copa del Rey final, so we were saying that maybe that would give them some confidence coming into the next game, and it really did, you know. And then they got an important 1-0 win against one of the best sides this season. So credit to Mallorca too for that really positive result for them.
Yeah, what a week for Aguirre's men. They are 8 points clear of the bottom three now, and like you say, can now look forward to a trip to Barcelona next Friday night to enjoy rather than to have to worry about what it will mean for the table. Barcelona, we just mentioned, they had a very tough game themselves. Trip to San Mamés, that's where we will turn to now. Athletic had won 10 in a row at home, and they did make some changes following their Copa del Rey triumph over Atleti. But Barça, I'm getting the sense, having just finished watching and a bit of the reaction I'm getting the sense that this is more of a disappointing point for Barca than a good point, given the rotations for Athletic, the absence of Nico Williams, Danny De Vian for the hosts, and yeah, the injuries. We'll talk about that as well. But first of all, Roman, your thoughts on the performance from Barca?
Honestly, I felt like the team had to give more in this game. As you said, you know, Athletic coming from that game also in the Copa del Rey, Barca knowing that Madrid had dropped points, that this was a great opportunity to go cut down the advantage to 6 points. With those 6 points, you feel like anything can happen. But we weren't capable. It was another of those games where, I don't know, something is missing. And if you add to that the fact that you lose two of your best midfielders, and we've been playing games without them before along the season, and it didn't go very well. And you kind of feel like when these guys aren't available, the team has no answers. The team has no player that can step up, you know, and fill their shoes, you know. And in that sense, Fermin, who's, you know, had a positive season today, for example, for me, had one of his worst games where he was very, I guess, unlucky with the ball, wasn't precise, was losing, was slipping, was not at his best tackling or giving passes. And obviously, I'm not putting the blame on him. It's just an example, you know, that when the important guys are missing, the others tend to struggle to do well enough. And I mean, we did have certain opportunities, almost a goal from Cancelo after a bad clearance from the goalkeeper that was saved in the line by Irai. But I mean, aside from that, we didn't generate that much danger. And I felt like a team that's fighting to go into the quarterfinals, quarterfinals of the Champions League and trying to cut points from Real Madrid needs to do much better.
Mm. Well, let's talk about those two significant losses, though. Frenkie de Jong went over on his ankle, and then Pedri. God, absolutely devastating to see him leave the field in tears. We all saw the pictures of him on the bench, just crestfallen. But once again, it looks as if it's a muscular injury. His hamstring appeared to go kind of once, and then he made a long pass and he just hit the floor, he knew. And again, as you say, with Napoli a week and a half away, those two key midfielders look to be in serious doubt to feature.
I mean, timing couldn't be worse. We already saw how we missed a chance at Napoli to actually basically close or shut down the game and have a comfortable or relatively comfortable home match. But we missed that chance, and now without these two, it just feels like it's going to be a very big mountain to climb. I mean, we still definitely can qualify and win the game, but I mean, these two for me are like the motor in midfield. Obviously, Gundogan being the third key player. Also, the fact that we don't have Gabi, obviously, because he got injured back last year during the season. I mean, it's going to be really complicated for Xavi to come up with a decent formation that can really win comfortably. It's going to be a struggle. It's going to be a tough game. And hopefully, at least Frenkie de Jong doesn't have a very tough ankle sprain, and he can be back on time. But if not, I am very worried. And I'm hoping also that Pedri doesn't have to be sitting out for too long, because poor kid, you know, I think it's his eighth hamstring injury or something like that. And it's just been awful since that year where he played the Olympics with Spain. From there on, it's been pretty much dramatic. I'm not sure if it comes down to that exclusively. Maybe it's just his body is how it is. But very, very unfortunate for Pedri.
Mm, devastating for him. Many said at the time, didn't they, that this is too much for a player his age. He's still developing and growing. This is just too much football. We played something like 60-plus games in that year, that season. Played the Euros and then all those extra times that Spain were involved in, and then played the Olympics, which also went all the way to the final with a lot of extra time. So he was nicknamed Pedri Proroga, wasn't he, with all those extra minutes in his legs. And sadly, again, causation or correlation, who knows, but that has clearly had some effect on his ability to stay clear of injury. And at the moment, he's just not able to get any kind of rhythm, is it? And it's just really sad to see for obviously him, for Barca and for Spain too, because you think of Gavi and Pedri would be future pillars of that side, and obviously both out injured. Well, let's turn now to Madrid once again, and the only team in the top half to win this weekend was Atleti. They needed a response, didn't they, after their trip to San Mamés, the really poor effort they put in, as we spoke about last midweek. But they got the win. They beat Betis 2-1. Morata had quite a day, didn't he? Missed a penalty, but then scored. It kind of sums him up quite a lot. But a crucial win for Diego Simeone's side to keep that cushion in the top four.
Yeah, Atletico needed to turn things around because it wasn't a great look in the Copa del Rey. I mean, they got battered by Athletic Club, and in La Liga they're on top of them in the standings, and they're expected to do much better. So, I mean, Betis was a tough challenge because we always know that they can be very difficult to play against. But in the end, Atletico improved on their output. They got the goals they needed to get the 3 points, which, as you said, are fantastic for them because obviously the top three dropped points this season. Now they're just three away from Barcelona. And obviously, I won't say they're in the title fight, but they are in the fight maybe for a second spot, third spot, you know. And they have to keep up these kind of results. They can't afford to show such a poor image as they did against Athletic Club. And of course, they have to also think about the version of themselves they want to show against Inter in the Champions League, which will be upcoming shortly also. So, I mean, Atletico needed this result desperately.
They certainly did. And it gives them a bit of breathing space. They're now 5 points clear of Athletic. And Athletic are also eight clear of Betis. So a lot of distance between fourth and sixth. So again, we're not sure if fifth will be enough for a Champions League, but either way, Atleti have improved their situation this week for sure. Just another thing on Barca, Napoli also played on Sunday night at the same time and they actually beat Juventus. So another worrying sign potentially for
They're on good track and they also won the game before that quite comfortably. So The new manager seems to be doing a pretty good job there.
Indeed, yeah. Let's see how that one pans out, but that's for next week. We'll take a quick break now, but we'll be back with all the other results, including some absolute goal fests and unexpected, really entertaining games. So stick with us.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to La Liga Lowdown. We've had some goal fests in the division this weekend, but none more so than at La Cerámica. Villarreal continue their improved form with a thumping 5-1 win over increasingly hopeless Granada. Villarreal now unbeaten in seven, which of course includes their win over Barça. They had three draws in between that, but they have had impressive wins last time out and this week. 3-1 away at Real Sociedad and then 5-1 over Granada. Alexander Sorloth with a hat-trick. If anyone was watching the Manchester derby and saw Erling Haaland's miss, almost in disbelief, this Norwegian striker, as was said, this one can find the net. Hat-trick for him, also goals from Capoue and Gonzalo Guedes. Dani Parejo with a fantastic performance. We know Granada are pretty much down really now, 10 points adrift for them. But yeah, Villarreal very much back to what we're expecting from them.
Yeah, it took a while, but it seems like Athletino is getting things, you know, in order a bit, and now they're getting a couple of very big wins for them. First against, of course, Real Sociedad, which was definitely a big one, and now against Granada, who we all know is practically relegated, but still, you have to go there and get the 3 points, and of course, scoring five goals is just fantastic, getting your important players in attack involved. Seeing how Guedes is becoming more and more important with every game. We all know what he was capable of back in the days when he was in Valencia. Unfortunately, in the Premier League, it didn't work out so well. But having him back is fantastic. And also looking into, of course, the Europa League match they have shortly against Marseille. I mean, this confidence in themselves is definitely something they wanted before getting to this match. Because just imagine arriving and playing against Marseille after drawing against Alaves, drawing against Getafe, and you know, maybe losing a game. So this is definitely is much a better situation, and hopefully they can prove to everybody that they are improving in that Europa League tie, which will definitely be a very big game.
It's a hell of a run now to test whether this new form is going to be sustained, because they go to the Velodrome on Thursday, then it's a trip to the Via Marine, then of course the second leg against Marseille, followed by hosting Valencia, of course another Marcelino reunion. And then they host Atleti and then go to San Mamed. So it's a really crunch time. They'll be very delighted that they are pretty much clear of trouble now, because that could be a really sticky run for them. But again, it'll be a chance to see how far they have progressed. But Granada, they got a consolation goal at the end, but still only two wins all season. 10 adrift. We're putting a fork in them, aren't we?
Yeah, as I said, practically relegated, if not already. There doesn't really seem to be a reaction. There are certain games where they look like they're not playing too bad, like they have their opportunities and that they maybe could grab some points. But at the end of the day, it feels like Almeria, you know, like they're not good enough, because we did see them draw 3-3 against Barcelona and, you know, perform at a good level. But then other games where they're expected to do much better, they just are incapable. So unfortunately for them, it just seems like they don't have enough to stay in the Spanish top tier.
Well, speaking of teams that are reviving, Sevilla are one of those two. Coming from further back, it's fair to say, but they took on Real Sociedad and they had another win, 3-2 at the Sanchez Pizjuan. En-Nesyri with a brace, Sergio Ramos with what proved to be the difference. Good to see Sevilla back on track. And again, Real Sociedad, just the form keeps slipping, and with PSG next, there doesn't appear to be much hope. So whichever way you want to take it, you can talk about Sevilla, talk about Real Sociedad, talk about both, up to you.
Yeah, like it feels like it's a bit of the opposite sensations we're getting with Villarreal, no? Yeah. They're heading into a super important game, and here they just aren't showing the level they were towards the end of last year. I mean, it maybe kind of feels like it's more Real Sociedad losing the game than Sevilla winning it. I don't want to take credit away from Sevilla, but the form the best team are in currently is just, I'd say, a bit sad, because, I mean, the hopes were so high not so long ago. And I mean, they were really playing incredible football. They were getting incredible results. The Champions League, you know, I think they topped the group, if I'm not mistaken. They did so well, or they were at least second. They were up there.
Two draws with Inter.
I mean, they were showing to the world that they are a team that can possibly compete at the highest level, but in the end it seems like maybe their squad wasn't deep enough, or maybe battery oxygen is running out, and unfortunately for them it isn't turning out too well. But on the other hand, at least Sevilla are did make the most of that, and we know how much they need these points, and good win for them, definitely.
Certainly looking more rosy for Sevilla. Let's head to the Coliseum now, because we spoke in the midweek pod that this was going to be a clash of styles. Getafe and Football Champagne against Pimienta's, pristine passing. But as so often with these kind of real clashes of styles, it ends up cancelling each other out and ends up being a draw. But it's so much more to the story, because Getafe raced into a 3-1 lead at half time. And at that point, you're thinking there's no way back for Las Palmas. But in the second half, they did come back, and the conditions were pretty wild in Madrid. It was a very blustery day, lots of rain around. But again, 3-3. Not often you see six goals at the Coliseum.
Yeah, definitely not a result you expect when Getafe is playing at home. As you said, conditions were very tough in Madrid for the Getafe game, also for the Rayo Vallecano game. I mean, in these conditions, it's never easy. But despite that, you know, the goals came. And I think Getafe will be quite disappointed. Because honestly, as you said, 3-1 up halftime. Seemed like the game was quite under control. And then, you know, first it was Sandro with a marvelous goal. Honestly, that was a fantastic one. He scored to cut the lead in the first half. But then in the second half, it seemed like it was going to be a tough job. But, you know, in 7 minutes, they scored a couple of goals through Cardona and Munir. And there was still plenty of time to turn it around. But in the end, it was a 3-3 result, which I guess was fair in the end. Although Getafe, for me, as I said, a bit disappointing. Because at home, you have to be capable of sustaining such a big result, especially taking into account that Getafe are a team that know how to defend, having Bordalas as a manager, basically.
This was a crucial game, really, in the kind of outside bet for European football, because with Real Sociedad's form so poor, this was a real chance for one of these two sides to push on. And yeah, with Getafe being 3-1 up, they would have gone above Las Palmas with a win, and would have gone into eighth and only a couple of points off Real Sociedad. So it does feel like a bit of a missed opportunity for Getafe. Euro Heter, of course, and as it is, they are now stuck in 10th. It's still very tight. There's only 5 points between Real Sociedad in 7th and Getafe in 10th. So we could have a little run for 7th place, which, of course, is a Conference League spot. That could be one of the things that we focus more in on more as we reach the end of the season. But as you see it right now, Roman, you know, Las Palmas, Valencia, Getafe, which one of those is most, even Villarreal potentially, which one of those is most likely to go on a run?
It's hard to say because, I mean, among those three teams, or probably those three teams are together with Girona, the biggest surprises of the season, you know, and honestly, I didn't expect any of them to be this high up at this stage of the season. Maybe I kind of feel like Valencia are looking quite solid with Baraja, although Las Palmas also are defensively, they don't concede too many goals, with the exception, of course, of certain games like this one or the one against Atletico Madrid, but usually tight results. We always say that they're lacking a bit in attack, but I mean, they have plenty of quality. They know how to control a game, and as we saw against Getafe, they also know how to come back from a steep result. So those two, for me, maybe have a better shot. But, I mean, Getafe are also there. And you never know in football. And it also depends on Real Sociedad. If they can turn around this poor form or if they keep this up, they're definitely going to lose that seventh spot. And then it will be either Las Palmas, Valencia, or one of those fighting with Betis.
The interesting thing with Las Palmas and Valencia, the records are almost identical. Both won 10 games, both drawn 7. Las Palmas have lost 10, Valencia 9, but Valencia have a game in hand. Las Palmas scored 29, conceded 29, goal difference of 0. Valencia scored 31, conceded 31, goal difference of 0, both on 37 points. So really fascinating to see that little mini tussle. But let's head towards the bottom once again. Let's dive down deep into the mire. Friday night, we said, was the huge, huge game between Celta and Almeria. This was like make or break for Rafa, and it took a while. It took a long while. Almeria were down to 10, and even then it took a bit more time. In the end, Oscar Mingueza came up with the winner. Relief for Celta. They are now 5 points clear of the drop, because we'll talk about Cadiz in just a moment, but huge win for Celta. Much needed. They had to win this game, and they did.
Yeah, they definitely had to win this game, because basically Almeria, well, they're the last in the standings, and we know that they tend to step up in tougher games, and this was probably one of those, because you know how desperate Celta were, and you know, of course, the Almeria won a result, won their first win, but they just seem to be incapable of finding it. It's true that Celta did get a goal ruled out in the first half, which maybe would have given them a bit more of, you know, not so much stress, we could say, and having to feel the pressure as the minutes went by, but unfortunately for them it didn't count. But Oscar Mingueza out of nowhere scored a beautiful shot that went really close to the post and was unstoppable for the goalkeeper, and that, as you said, were three super important 3 points for them. And on the other hand, it just feels like Almeria are just so unlucky, honestly, because no matter what they do, everything seems to go wrong. Like, for example, Bruno Lange, I remember, had a really good shot where he hit the post. The ball didn't go in, came back to him, another good opportunity, and the ball just glided past the top of the post again, and he had quite a good opportunity of scoring in both cases. And then he got sent off, for me, a bit harsh in the second half. And it feels like that's a summary of Almeria's season. You know, this unluckiness. Of course, aside from that, they are the worst team, and that's why they're at the bottom. But I kind of feel bad at times for them.
Mm.
But anyway,
Luca Romero had to go off, having done so well in the previous game against Atleti.
That's another one, you know. The injury was so unlucky. I mean, just things seem to be going so wrong for them, no matter what they try. And honestly, I hope that they can go down and restructure themselves and maybe get a shot at coming back up, because they've been extremely lucky, aside from how bad they have been for a big part of the season. But now it doesn't feel like they're that bad. They compete for the games, but they just never get the results in the end, even if they're fighting till the very last minute, you know. So unfortunate for Almeria and for Celta. Credit, because it was a massive win, as you said.
Do potentially worry for them in terms of the future, because they have invested a lot in that squad and certainly would not have budgeted to be going down. So could be a really harsh summer for them in terms of trying to save the money there. But yes, a big win for Celta. And last but by no means least, we go to Vallecas. Our amigo Rory Barlow was there to show how bad the conditions were. There was a protest before the game, Rayo fans forming a chain around the stadium, linking arms to say, "This is our place, do not move," sending a message to their president, Presa, loud and clear. As for the game itself, they thought they'd won it with a very late Florian Lejeune goal, but the conditions, it was a real picture, wasn't it? Because the game had to be stopped for the hail. And then Cadiz, again, the one team you think might just have something to get out of it, beginning to score a few more goals, and this was the latest of them all. Javier Hernandez, not Chicharito, of course. 90 plus 13. This is like minute 103 in the game, in the pouring rain, and Cadiz grabbed a point from Vallecas.
Yeah, I mean, we all thought Rayo had won that one. And out of nowhere, a beautiful pass, I'd say, to Javier Hernandez, going through I don't know how many lines of Rayo players, somehow made it through. I don't know if it was the conditions, if they couldn't see the ball very well, or what it was, but that was a perfect pass that obviously gave them a super important point in the end, because it really felt like there was going to be no reaction from Cadiz, especially seeing how the game had won, the difficult conditions to generate an attack and all that. So in the end, it gives them a little bit of hope still, because, I mean, they are far, but not that far in the end, you know. There's still a shot, and on the other hand, Rayo just really struggling to react to show the form that they did at the beginning of the season. And I mean, they are in a relatively comfortable position with 7 points from the bottom, from the drop zone, but if they keep this up, who knows what can happen.
They could get sucked in. I mean Cadiz have only lost 2 of the last 6, drawing the other 4. That's the problem, is that they just haven't had enough wins. They've got Atleti next, then away to Real Sociedad before Granada, and then Barça, Girona. So a tough run for Cadiz, you would think, as well. But if they can grab a win from somewhere, that'll keep Celta and Rayo honest at the bottom there. So you never know. If there's anyone that could get themselves out, it probably is Cadiz, but they'll need to make a move pretty soon, you would imagine.
Yeah, I have to completely agree with you, and it's a matter of time, because if they don't do that, then it's just going to get too complicated.
Well, that's the wrap on the weekend. Osasuna Alaves is your Monday night game, and then we have European football in midweek. Of course, the Europa League round of 16 first legs, and the second legs of some of the Champions League round of 16. Real Madrid in action, as are Real Sociedad. Before we do leave, I must also talk about Mukhtar Diakhali, because he suffered that horrible injury in the Valencia-Real Madrid game, and it was confirmed that he has dislocated his knee, so he'll be out for up to a year, Roman. It's really tough.
Yeah, I really feel bad for players that suffer these injuries. And also, it was like super unfortunate, you know? It wasn't like a harsh tackle or something that was intended with a negative purpose. It was just pure being in the wrong time, the wrong moment, you know, very unlucky. And hopefully he'll come back strong from that. But, you know, these injuries sometimes can be quite defining.
Yeah, indeed. We hope he's recovers well. Mucho ánimo to him and everyone affected by his injury there. Well, that's all we have time for tonight. We'll be back in midweek to react to the European games. And as we say, we're expecting Madrid to get through, but not Real Sociedad. So we'll see where that leads us. But from all of us here, thank you, Roman, for your time.
Thank you.
And we'll be back with you soon. Adios.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.